Welcome back for another episode in our conversation with Brandon.
Oh, it's exciting. This is part two of our second conversation, making it part three of our five-part series.
That's a lot of parts.
It's exciting. I love
So, anyway, last episode of Brains, Bibles, and Beyond, we ended with just starting the conversation on anomalous fossils.
Anomalous. That means they ain't found the right place.
It's kind of an anomaly.
Yes, it
anomalous.
Is.
Anyway, we get right into it right away as soon as the episode starts. Brandon is offering a reward for anybody who can find an anomalous fossil.
That's a tough word.
That's a tough word.
It is tough.
I should get $1,000 just for saying anomalous this many times.
Someone should give that to you.
Someone should. Anyway, if you do go out looking for an anomalous fossil, document it.
For sure.
We will not believe you.
Have a videographer follow you at all times.
All times.
Yes.
In fact, I do already. I mean, who doesn't have their own videographer?
Right. And of course, to do all that, you're going to have a lot of energy. So as you watch this video as well, drink up on that coffee.
This is the sort of thing that, like, I would hope that my $1,000, if I ever get to do this contest, right, that my $1,000 would go to show us. Because, of course, it makes sense to me that, like, well, we observe this pattern, but sometimes patterns are broken, right? It's possible that, like, one of these cool ancient sharks is still alive, or, like, was alive until a few million years ago, and we could find its fossils. It's even conceivably possible, right, that, like, rabbits could have evolved independently, from my perspective, like, 100 million years ago, or like 500 million years ago, back in the Cambrian or something like that. So it's possible that these things exist. And when we find them, I would get really, really excited. So tell me about these.
I like your enthusiasm. I just like Brandon. But anyway,
I want to be proved wrong is the thing.
Yeah, no, I get it. And we're on the same page for learning stuff. We love it. Okay, so I have one big example here. I know of some other things, but I don't have like the proof, you know, so I can look that up more because I don't want it just to be hearsay. Mm-hmm. But there is something here that I have. Let's see here. So you have, of course, many fossils that can fit in any or all time periods. Like we already mentioned the clams mm-hmm. and stuff. Virtually every layer containing multi-celled fossils and they're alive today of the living fossils. And so that kind of is an interesting idea too. We can hold off on that. We don't have to, you know.
Yeah.
I don't want
to. Can I just give an example of that that I happen to have a pretty picture of right now? We call these things sea feathers. You can get them for your aquarium. They're salt water. And a friend of mine who is a fossil collector, she says that they are nature's perfect animal. They evolved in the Cambrian. I think the Cambrian, maybe it's the Ordovician. And they've been relatively the same ever since. They just have no reason to change. So that would be an example of, I think what you're talking about, although I'm not understanding why you're saying that they're anomalous. But is this a good example of what you're talking about?
I'm sorry. I'm leading up to what
I'm sorry.
Yeah. So I just wanted to mention how there's basically... it's not all totally cut and dry, and like living fossils would be one of those examples too. And that's why I said we'll talk about that later. Like that'll be another thing. But just for the sake of the audience, the idea is that you find a fossil and you find the same exact thing alive today. That's why they call it living fossils. But we don't have to talk about that right now. So that'll be another time. So just saying that there are some oddities. And so this is the idea of there's a fossil that is found out of place. Like we expected it to be in certain layers and it's not. And so the one that they have here, it's a bell. It was found in coal from West Virginia. And it was actually dated at around 300 million years. But with this one, it actually is, I mean, it's definitely a human artifact, you know, it's this bronze, it's a bronze bell. So shaping bronze and everything, dated at 300 million years, because of the layer it was found in. This is the standard dating of the coal seam that it was in. And so it was from the, I hope I'm saying, it's the word carbon and then the ephorus. So carboniferous,
yeah.
Period. And so then there's, it's like, well, no, hold on, you know, no human artifact could reside in that ancient strata, you know, that whole thing. And so that's why this fossil is called anomalous.
Yeah, yeah.
And so there's other things too, like this is what I have a documentation on. But I've even heard of even, because I know we mentioned it before, we're talking about Triceratops. I've even heard of something like a Triceratops not showing up in the right layer. Yeah. And so then the layer it gets found in is renamed because it's supposed to be in that layer. Add it. And so, I was, you know, this kind of brings me to another point. The layers aren't totally cut and dry.
Yeah.
They grow. They get, it depends on what they find. It's like, how old is this layer? Well, look at the fossil. How old is the fossil? Look at the layer. Mm-hmm. And so there's, I appreciate the, you know, wanting to be consistent with that. And I'm not saying that you are falling in this category. It's just things that I've read. So, sure. And I just want to throw that out there, but go ahead. I'd like to
hear. This is great.
Yeah.
This is so good. Okay. So I'm hearing you say two different things. One is this category of anomalous fossils or even anomalous artifacts.
Yeah.
And the second one is the idea of circular reasoning of, we know that it's this layer because we find these fossils, but then we know that these fossils that's along this layer because we, which of those would you like me to address first? Because I love both of these.
Let's do the anomalous fossils because that's where what I brought up. So
yeah. Go ahead. Okay, so I will say that my back history is that I was raised in an evangelical Protestant family, and but also I read a ton of dinosaur books as a kid, just, you know, my local public library. And no one in my family really talked about young earth creationism very much. Somebody at our church gave me a copy of Dinosaurs, the Great Mystery, Dinosaurs in the Bible. I'm getting that that title a little bit wrong, but I love that book. But it was just so swamped from my experience by like all the dinosaur books that I was reading that I became sort of a default, yeah, I'm a Christian, but I understand that evolution happened and the world is this old. And then I became a young earth creationist when I was in, I believe it was eighth grade, when my public school natural science teacher had us do a debate on the age of the earth. And I went on the early internets and I looked up, he assigned me to the young earth creationist side, or at least the earth is young side. I don't think it was specifically aligned with Genesis, the side, but wasn't supposed to be at least. But all of the data online was, of course, done by young earth creationist organizations. And I found out about some of these finds of, you know, human footprints in Texas that overlapped with dinosaur footprints, and a hammer that was found, I forget where it was, fossilized in some, you know, really, really old rock. And that was like the basis of why I became a young earth creationist. I hadn't heard about the bell before, so thank you. So I just want to say that, like, if we can find these and show that they are likely to be authentic, like, that is the sort of thing that I would expect would be present if all the layers were formed at once. I guess we're just talking human artifacts right now. We can talk about the Triceratops in a second. I would expect that to be the case if the layers were all formed at once. And even one bronze bell in the Carboniferous would absolutely demolish all of my trust in this explanation. So I love that you are going for the jugular for that. I present to you my throats. Please slice it, right? I know we're being friendly and all that, but I want my, it's my great hope that I have at least one major change of view before I die. I'm 40 years old right now. I probably have a while, but I am hungry to find it. And so, like, one bell would totally do it. I don't know about this bell. And it's my observation that it's typically a bad idea when we're having a conversation to look up evidence. But then I think we should both look up the evidence after this and then come back together and talk about that. But I will say that, so I'm eager to look this up. I will say that every anomalous human artifact, this is taking the Triceratops and putting this to the side, every anomalous human artifact that I got excited about, I became disillusioned with. And I think you don't have to take my word for it. I feel like the best source of why we should be really skeptical of these, at least a lot of these anomalous human artifacts, come from other young Earth creationist organizations, the more reputable of them, that are actually kind of angry at a lot of these anomalous human artifacts that get touted as this destroys evolution. If it was true, it would destroy evolution. It would destroy the idea of an old Earth. But time and time again, I've seen that when we look into those, we find that they were sometimes like out and out hoaxes, right? The evolutionary community has its share of hoaxes too, right? The fact that hoaxes exist in the community does not disprove that that community's ideas are wrong. But hoaxes exist everywhere. But some of them have been hoaxes, and some of them have just been like, well, like we looked at like this hole where it was, the idea was that somebody fell in the mud next to these dinosaur tracks, and that they stuck their fingers in and their thumb in is one of them that I remember. But when you make the cast of it, does it really look like a human thumbprint or whatever there? Does it really just kind of look like a weird shaped rock, a weird shaped hole, right? We tend to find them like that. That was me talking for a long time. I apologize. How clear was I with that?
I think you just said that you're interested in checking it out. It might not be the real deal, but you're going to give it a real shake.
Absolutely. Yes.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah. And I'll find out. I'll pursue that a little further. I can send you the article too.
Sure.
And it is a creation, guys. You know, Dr. John Morris. You know, yeah. I'm sure you've heard of him. Anyways, and it's from back in 2010. So,
sure. Great.
I'll send that to you. Oh, I guess for the audience's sake, whoops. I'll put a link in. I'll put a link in for that, I guess, since I mentioned it. So,
you had also mentioned the Triceratops being found in the wrong layers.
Yeah, yeah.
Can you tell me more about that?
That's one of those I say, well, I don't have a source with it. I just remember reading it. And so I do want to pursue that. So, yeah, no, I'm not ready to share because I don't have the actual source. But I would like to, I'm making a note right now.
I have kind of a take on that. And that's that. Okay, so I forget exactly when Triceratops evolved. It was sometime in the Cretaceous. I forget if it was the early or late Cretaceous. But so we'll just say, here's the Cretaceous. Here's where Triceratops, the ones with the three horns, of course, Ceratops. If we know our Greek, we know what that means. Cerat meaning horn, tri meaning three. So it's totally possible, from my perspective, that let's imagine that right now we're saying that Triceratops evolved at exactly this moment in time, right? Like before, like not a minute before this bottom line of the Cretaceous. It is absolutely totally possible, like all scientists would agree, all paleontologists would agree, that Triceratops actually evolved a wee little bit before that. Like the first Triceratops like might be found over here. If they did, we could find their fossils, right? If there are fossils there, we could find them. And scientists would not like say, oh, this overturns evolution. They would say, oh, like this is really exciting. It turns out they lived earlier. And then they'd move that line back a little bit. And then that would make it, open for, you know, the next round of scientists to say, well, actually, but now we've found some Triceratops fossils even a little bit before that. Right? And that wouldn't upset evolution. Scientists would still publish it. In fact, not only would they publish it, but like if you were a graduate student, congratulations, like you've just gotten your PhD, right? Like you've just like gotten published in like one of the major paleontology journals. If it's true that we are finding Triceratops or any species in like times right next to like where it should be found, then this should be getting a lot of attention. That's especially true with the case of the later dinosaurs. If you find them like even like, you know, 1 inch up into this Cenozoic rock right here, because scientists know that like the major theory that we have right now is that an asteroid hit the Earth about 66 million years ago. The alternative theory is that there were tons of volcanoes going off in India that did it. So whichever, whatever. But scientists know that like this wasn't a, not all of the dinosaurs died in exactly 1 second, right? There must have been some triceratops that survived like a year, maybe in a particularly lush area, and then it had kids, and like then that they would survive for a few more, another generation. So we know that there must be some big, cool dinosaurs that are here at the very beginning of the Cenozoic, even if it's just a couple of years in. The first person who finds that fossil will be on the cover of Time magazine. I can only imagine that there are paleontologists out there looking at exactly those layers, using those maps that we were looking at, hunting through those layers, trying to find a big, cool dinosaur skeleton. But we don't hear about it, or at least we haven't heard about it yet. So I feel like the reason that I'm skeptical that we find these Triceratops fossils in the wrong place is because at least if they were in kind of like certain wrong places, like those are the ones that we should be hearing about the most often. Okay, that was kind of abstract. I apologize. How well did I come across there? Or I guess how clearly did I come across there?
Well, I got your point. You're skeptical. You're skeptical. Of course, I think that it could be there could be other there could be reasons why things would be hidden, and that would be coming from my perspective. I would say maybe we can hold off on that until we both check this out a little bit more
Sure.
with these how do you say it again? Anomalous
Well,
fossils.
an anomalous.
Anomalous. There we go. I knew I was
Anomalous.
saying it wrong. There you go. So when we check out a little more, and that could be like our next time.
And I
And I
just
would love to
so
talk
we can
about
do
that.
that, and I won't dig into it. I just want to say that from my perspective, there are two scenarios that we will want to discuss there. One of them is anomalous fossils of Triceratops being found right next to the layers, right above or right below where we are currently finding them. And then there'd be like anomalous fossils, like finding a Triceratops like up here in the Hill of North America, or down here, or goodness help us all, like down in here or something like that. And yeah, those are two different situations.
Okay, and then of course, I think one of the disadvantages we have in the fossil record is how extremely little we have found with even animals with a vertebrae. I mean, just how little. It's like what a quarter of a percent, something like that, of the whole fossil record. It's all we have. It's so little. And with the flood model that I've presented with you, we would actually expect to be finding a large number of fossils in the ocean as it would get dragged back down with the drainage. With the original ocean crust, long story short, being dragged down below the surface, and there being a new ocean crust formed, basically from the lava and things like that. A lot of shifting, a lot of things going on there. So we would expect actually to find a whole bunch of fossils down there. But like we've already said, there's so little that we've been able to dig so far, and things like that. It is sad to have such little data. But I am excited to look into this a little bit more with you, to see if we can find things that are out of place. And that the burden, I'll admit, the burden lies on me. I'm the one that has to come up with the proof. You don't actually have to do anything there. And so, because it's my model that's saying that, hey, we could probably find things out of place. Your model saying, man, we're not really not, I mean, straying this much, but not this much, that kind of idea. And that's okay. I'd say we've talked for a long time, and I don't want you to.
Can I just like reflect on the thing that you just said at the end there?
Go ahead. Go ahead.
So, I think you're right that the burden of proof then is on your side to do this, but I invite your side to do this. One of the projects that I'd love to do in the future is like just really like making an offer to the young Earth creationist community, saying like, please like gut us, right? Like help us see the error of our ways. Here's exactly how you do it. Here are like instructions, hints on like how to go out to your house right now, see what layer you live in, and like here's how to like physically go out and find fossils. So like I'm excited for that. I will add on to that that I feel like my side is actually very brittle. because your side can say, well, like things can like move around a lot, right? Like we could, it's kind of a chaotic sort of situation. And I would say like, no, like one rabbit that would be found like in the Precambrian, right? Like would make me go, oh my gosh, everything that I believe is probably wrong. It's like the fact, so there's a balance here, right? The burden of proof is on your side, but one single finding can demolish it. And I'll even say that it's not like the only reason to go out and, if you're a young earth creationist, to go out and like look into this is not just because you want to like prove me wrong or prove evolutionists wrong or something like that. It's because you can make a lot of money doing this. Because as it is, oh, you can become so filthy rich. Because as it is, that layer that you were saying before, the Carboniferous is this very specific layer that runs kind of near the end of the Paleozoic, but not quite to the end. That is where, from what I understand, almost all of the coal that we have has been formed. Coal, like if you find a new coal deposit, you can make a lot of money selling that coal if it is good quality coal, right? The Des Moines area, right, like used to be a coal producing area. Turns out the coal had too much sulfur in it, so eventually they kind of shut that down because it was really stinky coal, so that was a problem. But the people who are still looking for coal deposits are only looking in these blue areas of the world. But according to the young earth creationists, right, sort of everything, at least the flood catastrophists, sort of like everything is a jumble idea, you should be able to find big coal deposits in lots of these areas. That means that a young earth creationist geologist stands to make, at least be somewhat likely to make a lot of money that an evolutionary geologist would never be able to make, if the young earth creationist geologist is correct with the flood jumbling things up. Did that make sense? I feel like I go in these like spiels and I'm like, oh gosh, like, I don't know if that sounded, is that just, okay, yeah, I'm sorry.
I mean, just a clarifying point, though.
Yeah.
It's not that it's all chaotic, because it is mostly what am I looking for? The word it's where we expect it to be. There is an expectation, and that's totally fine. I'd say that we both sides actually have flexibility. The idea is when you find something new, you go, wait, how'd that get there? Oh, okay. And you think of a way that it got there, you know what I mean? So like we both do that. One more recent famous example is that Mary Schweitzer, I believe her name is, that found the red blood cell, the soft tissue in the T-Rex. It was stretchy. And it's like, well, there's no way that that's 65 million years old. You know, it can't even be a million years old. You know,
why?
What was that?
Why? Why not?
Because of the breakdown of the red blood cells and for the soft tissue, it just shouldn't be there if it's really old.
What? And why do you think that? I'm sorry. I know this sounds obvious, but like, are you? This is gonna sound snarky.
Go ahead.
Are you a PhD in molecular biology? Because I guarantee you that I am not a PhD in molecular biology. Right? Like, I have intuitive models as to like how long some things should last. But I don't actually like have a real understanding of how long a red blood cell should last in a specific environment for a specific amount of time.
Well, I would say with the models that exist for everyone that would be in these PhDs, no one would expect it to last for that long. Mary Schweitzer actually came under lots of attack. There's even straight doubts. They're saying there's no way that you could actually see this, but it's documented.
Yeah, yeah, because we hadn't found anything like that before. Yeah, never.
Yeah. So, yeah, so we can, you can look at that a little more, I guess.
Can I say right now, like, what my sort of, like, take on this is going to be, at least cognitively, is what's going on in people's heads with this?
Go ahead.
I was really surprised when I heard that, because I thought, oh yeah, like things like organic things don't last that long. And then I realized that I had been thinking all along like an Aristotelian, right? Like, so Aristotle, right, had this physics where he said, oh, it's in the natural order of things for them to decay and to break down. And that's the model that most of us go through life with, because it makes sense of the things that we see around us, And it took, you know, kind of until Newton to realize that no, like it is not in the natural order of things. The natural order of an object in motion is like to stay in motion. The natural order for like something is to actually stay static unless something comes along and messes it up. So we're used to this world that is full of bacteria and is really warm, right? So that it makes the atoms jiggle around a lot. But something that is entombed in rock, in muck and then rock, if there are not bacteria there, or if the bacteria are killed really quickly, then like the natural assumption is that those atoms will continue to exist. They will continue to stay bonded to those molecules, and those molecules will tend to stay bonded together into their cells. So I would actually say that like that doesn't often make me doubt the age of that at all. But if you have a stronger take on this, we can revisit this later. You had also mentioned the circularity of the process by which we figure out what layer we call something. Can you restate that? Because I'd like an opportunity to give my thoughts on that as well. I feel like this is actually really misunderstood in the unearthed creationist community.
Just the idea that if we find a fossil outside of the expected layer, we can then include that in the expected layer. It is now renamed. There's that idea. Maybe that's not actually what you're referring to. I think actually what you're referring to is, I'm sorry. I think what you're referring to is the, if we find a fossil, we say, huh, how old is this fossil? Mm-hmm. Well, which layer did you find it in? I found it in this layer. Okay. So we know how old the fossil is now. And then another day they say, hey, how old's that layer? And then they'll say, well, what sort of fossils do you find in it?
Yeah.
They'll say
yeah.
these kind of fossils. And they'll say, oh, well, then it's this old.
Yeah.
It's that idea.
Yeah. Yeah. So I would say that this is a really abstract topic and I have a hard time, but I can do it. Darn it. I think I can do this. Okay. So we do this and like, there's usually a lot of faith put in this. I'll say trust to avoid the word faith there, which can get contentious and mean different things. But there's a lot of trust put into this because every time in the past, that trust has ended up being warranted. So let me give an example of this. When we started to try to figure out what layers these were, we really didn't know, right? And so we looked and we saw like, where were the divisions between these layers and what kind of fossils are in here? And we paid attention to the patterns that we found. And every once in a while, right, we'll break, one of these patterns will be broken. We'll find out that like an animal actually survived a lot longer than we thought it had before, like the coelacanthus found or something like that, right? But by and large, like we don't find T-Rex fossils in the Cenozoic. Well, sorry, we've never found a T-Rex fossil in the Cenozoic. We've never found one in the Paleozoic. These patterns really do hold. And I feel like when I've heard my young Earth creationist friends talk about this, I feel like they don't understand that the rocks around their houses have already been sort of named. So if up in, well, here, I'll use me this time because I used you before. If up in, really, the internet, really? there's an app too, but honestly, it's not as good as the website. So up here in Rochester, we live in the Paleozoic, which in mine is drawn as blue here. Why didn't they use the normal thing? If we found a T-Rex fossil, we would not say, oh, I guess we just got those rock layers wrong. We'd say, wait a second, what? We'd say T-Rexes and these Godzilla squid, like they lived at the same time. And the scientists would start by saying, like, that must be a hoax. And then, like, if enough people looked into it, we could say, like, oh, no, like, actually, this was a real thing, right? Here are the pictures of me excavating it from the ground. Here's, like, where I took it out of the ground. Here, like, we can, like, dig in this area to see if we can find more T-Rexes or things like dinosaurs like that. That would be the end of the idea of the geologic column. We'd have to go back to square one with this. It really would not be a, well, I guess we've just, we got the layer wrong. I guess it's a Mesozoic as opposed to a Paleozoic. Does that make sense? I feel like when I hear people talking about this, they think it's just like it's this simple sort of circular thing. And like, I promise you, like, no, it's really, really not. It's only can be used in both directions because this pattern of which that we've only find certain kinds of fossils in certain layers has proven so resilient. Whew. Thoughts?
Well, I'd like to get to a point of wrapping up. So I'm trying, I don't want to bring up anything new necessarily, but I would say that, I mean, I'm in agreement that there are layers that show time. But of course, what I'm saying is, well, it took that long for the T-Rex to be covered in muck because he was escaping. No. That's what I would say. And, and so for other things that would show that, because I would see it as, you know, depth, whereas the standard old earth person would see it as like, an era, a period, mm-hmm. you know, you're going down through time because it's so significantly different, you know? So I would largely disagree with that. I'd say there's actually no reason to believe in that ancient time. I'd say there's actually no empirical evidence. It's simply theories and assumptions. I think, you know, kind of closing thoughts that I want to, we're going to talk again. So kind of a closing, let me give some closing thoughts and I'll let you give closing thoughts. And then we'll let Nate say, well, that's enough, you know. because we've kind of started talking about this before, but you have like, you know, the living fossils, you know, there's no change. You know, why is there no change if this is evolution, this is through time, why is there no change? You know, the polystrates where you have the trees going through many layers. And so that couldn't have been like, you know, a long time. Couldn't have been, you know, millions of years or even hundreds of thousands or 10,000 years. It couldn't have been those sort of things. So we'd have to talk through all those sort of ideas. I think that there's, we can come back to, we are going to come back to the fossils out of place, like that bell, that bronze bell, way down, way, way down. And so, you know, things like that. I think there was some more. I just don't have the information right in front of me. If there is, I want to find it. If not, I'll admit it. And so, you know, that sort of thing. And I don't think it's accurate to, look at it as ancient time. And I would like to see some real good empirical evidence for that. Because I just don't see it. I would also like to say, I haven't said this before. But I am a real big, you know, and you know this, I'm a big literal 6-day creation guy. Global flood guy, reading the Bible as true history. That's where we stand. And so for me, when I have other people that are brothers and sisters in Christ, and they would say, well, I believe God created, but he used evolution. And I would say, no, you can't have both. They're mutually corrosive. One, if you just don't know enough about them, you know, if you knew enough about them, one destroys the other. They can't both stand at the same time. What I appreciate, what I think I see your understanding is that you would also be in that same place that you can't have both. It would seem that way. And maybe I'm wrong about that, but it seems to me that you tie those two things together in the same way I do. You're just coming out the other end, you know, but correct me if I'm wrong on that. And also in the closing things to say, I just want to say this was just such an enjoyable conversation, and I have just thoroughly loved it, and I am definitely looking forward to more of this again, and even seeing you face to face up in Rochester again, or if I maybe in Ankeny if you come on down, you just got to say the name right. If you're here, that's all.
I almost corrected you a second ago and then realized, no, Brandon, you don't know how to pronounce that word. Why do you keep thinking that you do?
Oh, that's good. Okay. So anyways, yeah, I really appreciate you and I love the discussion, and you're a really intelligent guy. You love truth. You love studying and it shows. And, you're not doing the insults. You're not raising your voice. You're not, you know, you're letting me speak. You're wanting me to be clear, all those sort of things. And that's what we need more of on both sides. Let me be the first to admit that there are people that are doing wrong that I would agree with, on different things. So on both sides, you know, there's people need to do better. So that's all I'm going to say for closing. So even if I think of something new, I'm just cutting myself off here. You go ahead and speak, Brandon, and then we'll let Nate do the official closing.
So I don't have anything beautiful to share. I will say that I have very much enjoyed the tenor of this conversation. I will say that I have some shame in that I can even feel in myself throughout this, right? That sort of that wild dog of like wanting to like to win, to defeat, right? And I'm hopeful that I've kept those sort of animal spirits in check enough from this. The work that we are doing is too important to bridge communities together who can only online make snide comments at best about each other. It's too important for us to be modeling this and helping form bridges in this time of social upheaval. So I'm very thankful for that. I will say that in response to your question about my view as to the theology of evolution, like when I was younger, I really wanted to become a theologian, right? Like I wanted to become an apologist. And I am kind of still like, whatever my own religious proclivities are, I kind of am a theology nerd at heart and always will be. So I have thoughts on that as to, you know, like how evolution can or cannot fit with Christianity. But because I'm doing this in the capacity of the founder of Science is Weird, I don't feel like it is anything that I want to address right now with this. Also, like we're not talking evolution, right? We're talking story of the Earth, not even the like exact age of the Earth, just like whether the Earth has these separate chapters, lost worlds, or just one big lost world, one big sure. old chapter. So I don't want to touch that for those reasons. Yeah, that's all I got. I'm really happy with this. Thank you.
All right. Well, I think that wraps up for today. Appreciate you, Brandon. And then I guess just to take home for everybody at home, Brandon's got $1,000 for you if you find a good fossil. So everybody can get outside, make some cash. Just make sure it's documented properly, because no one's gonna believe you if it's not documented. But I hope people, you know, at least get interested in studying, that people start digging into it for their own. Don't just believe things because you've always been told it. But dig into it. Look at the proof. Look at the evidence that's there, and see the world around us. And I think a lot of people will have their eyes opened if they really study, at least understand why they believe things. And I appreciate you, Brandon, taking the time to help kind of explain so I can understand where you're coming from better. I can say you haven't won me over, but I do appreciate you taking the time that I can understand. So I don't sound so ignorant when I, you know, cause a lot of people get in the habit of, you know, talking about evolutionists, oh, you know, they believe this and this and this. It's not necessarily true that they believe certain things. You know, we hear other creationists say evolutionists believe that. It may or may not be true, you know? So I appreciate you taking the time to say, okay, you know, this is what we're actually believing. And so that's nice. It's been beneficial to me. And I hope to everyone, as far as that goes. So anyway, I think that wraps it up, and we'll do this again. Thank you.
We sure will.
Well, guys, that wraps up part 3 of 5.
Yeah.
And I hope you all learned something. I know I did. I think I mentioned that there at the end of that episode. And Brandon certainly is a good teacher. You can see why he would be good Definitely. As a science teacher. Very, very passionate about what he believes. And just, you know, searching and understanding how the world around us works. So we will be...
Having been a full-time teacher myself before, I recognize that skill set, and I love it. And so, yeah, I was able to learn, too.
Yeah, cool. So this was good. We had a good conversation. Obviously, that was our intent, is to learn and maybe convince a little bit. But we weren't necessarily trying to have a debate.
It's a conversation.
The 1% chance that, you know, could have persuaded somebody, that would have been great.
But it's always that joy inside.
That was not our goal with this conversation.
Right.
Was to learn in pursuit of knowledge. So anyway, we have one interview left. Mm-hmm. It is split into 2 parts. This interview that coming up would be from June of 23. And Joel and Brandon each have three questions that they ask for the other person.
Gets a little out of hand, but it's fun.
It would be a fist fight, but it was through Zoom. So
you'll have to check it out.
You have to check it out. We will see you next time.
Indeed.